Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. This is your host, Tim Tapp. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. It's a little soggy here in East Tennessee. Want to send out thoughts and prayers to the folks a little bit further to the south of us because they are experiencing much worse weather than we are right now. With that having been said, let's jump right into today's main story. Now, for those of you who caught Wednesday's broadcast, you know that I've already discussed the Judicial Watch article that came out this past week talking about camps in ISIS. I wanted to talk a little bit more about that because in the time since that has come out, the federal government has come out with denials that this is true. And folks like PolitiFact, for example, have came out and tried to rebuke it. So let's talk about this. First and foremost, let's talk about Judicial Watch. Now, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, and I would say that the majority of the folks that listen to this broadcast on a regular basis probably are familiar with Judicial Watch, but just in case, they've been around for a little while. Just like the name would suggest, they're a watchdog group that typically focuses on the legal system. They keep an eye on activist judges, and they keep an eye on things of that nature. However, every now and then, things that are significant, they report on. I'd also like to go ahead and take this opportunity right now to ask everybody listening to the show to go on over to judicialwatch.org, check out their site in its totality, learn a little bit more about them, and if you can spare it, maybe even make a contribution because these folks do good work. Bottom line is, I went with this story as soon as I came across it for Wednesday's broadcast because these guys are trustworthy. I trust them because just about every single time they have written something, it has proven out to be 100% true. And on the occasions that it hasn't been 100%, it's still been 97, 98% true. Sometimes some things are a little off. The bottom line is these folks are legitimate journalists, they're legitimate watchdogs, and they're trying to do the job of informing the populace. They're exactly what everybody in the conservative media arena wants a website to be: thoughtful, thorough, with actual investigative reporting. And that's what they did when they reported back on April 14th the story about ISIS operating camp just a few miles from El Paso, Texas. Judicial Watch found sources that included a Mexican Army field grade officer and a Mexican federal police inspector. They talked about the fact that there actually were multiple bases. There were two specific bases mentioned in the article. The location of both of these bases happened to be in areas that are being basically run and controlled by drug cartels. These cartels evidently are helping the terrorists find ways to cross the border. They have mules that are working in exchange for cash, undoubtedly. When they did a raid on the cartels, they came across, in these bases, various different items that made it quite clear of exactly who these folks were. Number one, they found several Muslim prayer rugs. They found plans to military bases, plans to universities and colleges. The bottom line here is that it's quite clear from what they discovered, from what they found, that ISIS is in fact operating training facilities just to the south of our border. With free range access and attempts with paths to cross in Texas, in New Mexico, and sources have come forth since this article was released, saying also in Arizona. I went hard with this on Wednesday, and I'm pretty sure that I was actually one of the first people out here talking about this article. Not a lot of folks caught on to it until the next day or the day after. But it's big news, and it's a big deal. But I asked you, as far as big news is concerned, how much media coverage have you seen to the mainstream media? In fact, unless you're listening to conservative radio talk show hosts, you're not hearing this story very much, if at all. Unless what you're hearing is the official Obama administration story that is just not true. Even PolitiFact, which, you know, being what they are, PolitiFact is supposed to be looking at things that are being told story-wise within the political world, and then they're supposed to decide whether something is true or mostly true, false or mostly false. Well, PolitiFact gave it a mostly false. But then if you take the time to look at what they actually read in their determinations, they use almost exactly zero facts of any kind and just talk about opinion where they disagreed with a particular writer that has nothing to do with the article in Judicial Watch. What I find most amazing, what I find most damning about this is that the administration currently is saying, no, there is no credible threat from ISIS coming across our border. No, this is not an issue that Americans should be worried about. It's just people trying to whip up concern going into an election cycle. Now, I'm sorry. But who do you believe more? That's what I want to know. Who do you believe more? Would you believe the folks at Judicial Watch? Or would you believe the current administration? You know, the same folks that can't seem to even tell the truth about the things that they're supposedly proud of. The most open and honest administration of all time has been openly honest about the fact that they can't be open or honest about anything. And they're denying this. Now, I will grant you the fact that you find Muslim prayer rugs doesn't automatically equal ISIS. But when you look back at the fact that ISIS has been telling us from the beginning that, oh, yes, this is how they're going to get into the states, they're going to come across our southern border, then you have to start to say, should we take these folks at their word? We're in the middle of a legitimate Christian genocide, a legitimate Christian Holocaust at the hands of ISIS as they're operating in Syria and in northern areas of Iraq. They said they would do that, and they are doing it even while forces are hammering down on them. I think we can take them at their word. They said they will get at us through our southern border, and now we've found bases that obviously were not being utilized by the cartels for their drug operations. These bases are being used for training, and these bases are being used as a starting point to get would-be terrorists across our southern border to target Americans. Now, you can take this to any other place you want to, but I want to know why the administration comes out and says, oh, no, there's no threat. I would actually be less concerned if they came forward and said, oh, yes, there may be a credible threat. Because then I start saying, well, if they know about it and they haven't read about a terrorist attack in the newspaper or saw it on TV, then it's not news yet in the minds of Obama. So maybe I could take this as a credible story. But no. They denied it. So now the question becomes, who do you believe? I, for one, am much more inclined to believe the folks over at Judicial Watch. Like I said, I haven't seen them come out with a bad piece of journalism. And I've been watching and reading Judicial Watch articles for a while. I mean, they came about, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around the late 90s, maybe the mid-90s. I haven't been reading Judicial Watch since then, but I did come across them in the mid-2000s. I think they're good people doing the good work that the American people need in an attempt to inform us about what's going on. Like I said, they don't exclusively focus on just judicial activism. But that is their primary target. And in their efforts to focus on that, they need credibility. And I think they've done a tremendous job of maintaining their credibility. They don't go around making stuff up. When it comes to PolitiFact trying to tear them down, I don't pay much attention to PolitiFact because more often than not, I see them assigning the mostly false, the things that I know for a fact are true. And I'm sure a lot of you have done the same if you've seen or paid attention to them before. So the fact that PolitiFact is one of the folks coming out there to the rescue, yeah, I'm going to question their credibility. And not just because I disagree with what they have to say, but because there are times that I, like I just said, have seen things that I know for certain are fact, that they will say, nope, sorry, not true. They have intelligence that reported to Judicial Watch that they have spotters in the New Mexico mountains helping them to move folks across. Now, these bases were empty for the most part. The fact that they still found these documents and the prayer rugs indicates that somebody tipped them off and they got out of Dodge. They got out of Dodge in a hurry. But how long have these folks been operating these bases? I don't know. But I think it's safe to say that it's been going on for a while. And I also think that it's safe to say that Americans are not safe as long as our border is wide open and we're not doing anything to monitor the folks that are coming across. This isn't a racist thing. This isn't a, ooh, you don't like Hispanics thing. Because guess what? These aren't even Hispanics that we're having to worry about coming across the border now. If we had done what we should have done as a nation and locked down our border to the point that we could control who was and wasn't coming across many decades ago when we should have, then this wouldn't be an option for people who want to come into the States and kill Americans just because we're Americans. And that is exactly who you're dealing with when you're dealing with ISIS. ISIS puts as much blame on the United States as it does France and Britain over the whole Sykes-Picot border issue. All right, ladies and gentlemen, sorry about that. They had a issue. Like I said, we're having some serious weather issues around here. And unfortunately, the connection was lost. However, I'm back, and I'm going to have to ask you to please bear with us as we fight through these technical issues having to do it. That's always the issue when you're doing a broadcast from a studio outside of where the direct broadcasting is taking place. Okay, another technical glitch. As the weather continues to get worse, we're in this situation, so we'll try to get through at least this topic. And if the weather continues to get worse, then I will end the show early, which I absolutely hate to do because I still want to talk about a few other topics real quick as well. But here's the issue, and again, I apologize over the technical issues, weather being what it is, but okay, why are we not hearing more about this story? Why is the media on the left so determined not to report what's going on just across the border? Even if they don't believe that ISIS is there, why are we not hearing about the fact that we have one of the largest upticks in people crossing the border that are, what is it they call them, other than Mexican? We have one of the highest rates of other than Mexicans crossing our southern border in the history of the country. Most of them Arabic-speaking people. That alone should be cause for concern. Even if they're not ISIS, how does somebody from Yemen or from Saudi Arabia or from Iraq get to Mexico just to cross our southern border if their intentions are peaceful and pleasant and so on and so forth? How does that happen? Why don't they just come directly here? What is the point of coming across our southern border in a fashion that they know to be illegal so that, well, by the way, we're not really aware that you happen to be here? Does anybody think these people have good intentions? Oh, I'm just everyday, average, hardworking people that just want a better life. Okay, so back again, another technical issue, and it's getting crazy. The weather here is getting a little bit worse, too. But anyway, as I was saying, this isn't an issue about being racist. This isn't an issue about caring about who's coming here and how they come here, what their purpose is. This is an issue, actually, about who's coming here, because we need to know. And how you come here determines what we do and do not know. We need to have border agents that are in a position where they can actually do their job. We need them to have the support of our federal government, the folks that are supposed to be sending them the cash and sending them the weapons that they need and sending them the body armor and giving them the rules of engagement for their behavior that actually makes sense as far as protecting our borders. We can't possibly believe that it means they're coming here from Egypt because they want to be our friends if they're sneaking across the border. We know for a fact there's a ton of people in and around the White House right now who have way too much access to the Obama administration, who were members of the Muslim Brotherhood, that can just easily come and go however they want. So again, what's the need of coming across our southern border illegally? We know it's happening. It's just not being reported. We know it's happening, but it's not a story that the leftists want told. And what is it that we're waiting for? What is it going to take before somebody finally says, all right, that's it, we're closing the borders? I came across a statistic just a few months ago, and this is still something that, you know, I haven't been able to verify it, but it says that there is essentially anywhere between 100 to 200 shootings a month of people who are coming across the border illegally, or local militias or individual people protecting their property, shooting trespassers, are shooting on people that are crossing the border illegally. Now, given the fact that that could be twisted into saying, oh, you're just a bunch of racist, hateful people, you'd expect that story would get told a little bit more by the left media. But you see, here's the problem with that. They can't tell that story without admitting how porous the border really is. They want you to believe that it's just an occasional problem, that there's not really mass crossings of our border. There's not really people just coming across whenever they want to. There's not really cases of Border Patrol agents being able to physically, visually see these people coming, but because they don't have the proper equipment, cannot engage them or have been told not to. There are standing orders for our Border Patrol agents to stand down in a multitude of scenarios. And there are standing orders that when they do pick someone up, that they are to process them and then release them after having given them a court date. Whereas if your intention is to go do something bad, or even if your intention is to just go find work somewhere and then stay under the radar, like most illegals try to do, then you're not going to show up for that court date. You're going to make sure you're long gone and well out of the jurisdictional range of any local law enforcement. The border agents know that. They know what's going to happen, and they have filed protests to their superiors. They have informed Washington of how ineffective this policy is, and yet they continue to operate this policy. So the question becomes, what is the end game? What is the purpose? What is the point? Now, here is where it's time to put on the tinfoil hat and start wandering down the road of possibilities. But you see, there's still only a few reasons why anybody would possibly want to do this. And make no mistake about it, this is what's happening. It's not accidental. It's not a lack of understanding of what's going to happen when you institute these policies. These are policies that have been put in place with the specific purpose of getting an end result. Now, the obvious political end result idea here is that the reason the Republicans haven't really put their foot down on it in previous administrations is because they want the cheap labor. And the reason why the Democrats don't want to put their foot down and shore up the border is because they believe they're going to be able to turn every illegal that crosses the border into a Democratic voter. And if it really is just that simple, then both sides need to have their backsides booted hard multiple times just for that reason alone. Ridiculously selfish, ridiculously self-serving, and it fails to do the simple job that they have been elected to do. All right, I'm back again, and again, I apologize. Major electrical strike nearby. Anyway, as I was saying before the last power failure, and again, I apologize over the is continuity of the show at the moment. But we can't control what these people are bringing across the border with them when they come across the border in this nature. So there's no way that we can adequately be protected by the federal government. But now let's go a little further down the tinfoil hat crowd's possible end results. Let's pretend for a second that maybe, just maybe, and again, understand I'm engaging in pure speculation and extrapolation at this point. I'm not saying this is what's happening. I'm not saying that I even think that this is the route that they're going, but I'm saying let's pretend for a moment. Let's pretend for a moment that someone high enough in the halls of influence in our government has an end game where they want an American city to be hit by a terrorist attack, by something clearly from outside of our borders. What would you do? Well, naturally, we would need to leave the southern borders completely open. We need that because they need a way to get in and a way that they can move large numbers of personnel and large numbers of conventional and maybe even not so conventional weaponry without being stopped. We need to make sure that the Bureau of Land Management has not been adequately doing their jobs of protecting the lands that they're supposed to be patrolling, that our Border Patrol is incapable of stopping drug cartel mule traffics, and to make sure they're not capable of stopping them, that means that we, in fact, have to make sure that they don't have the proper equipment. Then, for the heroes among them, and, you know, we have men and women that serve in this capacity, that are brave and want nothing more than to do their jobs, and some of them might even be willing to put themselves in harm's way even without the necessary equipment. So for those people, you have to put standing orders in place so that when they go off the reservation and actually do their jobs, or attempt to do it, that they have a ton of red tape to cut through and possibly even be punished for violating these orders, even when all they actually did was their job. Now, once you've done that, you've opened the door to allow an attack. You've opened the door so that you have excuses to do a myriad of things at that point. Right now, there was a bill that has been introduced that is designed to, in essence, stop the NSA spying, to help reestablish the Fourth Amendment. Because right now, as far as the federal government is concerned, the Fourth Amendment doesn't exist. All intents and purposes, neither does the First Amendment. Our Constitution no longer is being attacked. It is now being flat out ignored, largely in part to the fact that most of the American people have been okay with the government protecting us. So now they have an excuse to look at something like the Patriot Act and possibly even strengthen it because of the American outcry against the attack that took place. Or let's go even a little further into that scary realm. And you remember those executive orders that took place about 2 years into Obama's first term? You know, the ones where certain conservative sources voiced concern, and then a lot of other people said, oh, it's nothing, it's no big deal. But the ones that would make it easier for martial law to be declared. Let's say that there's a major attack in a major city, and it becomes necessary for public safety, of course, to declare martial law, to suspend the elections, to extend an Obama presidency. Oh, could that be a potential endgame? Now, I don't know. I certainly hope that this isn't something that's playing out. I would like to think that this is complete fantasy and that I'm just sitting here making stuff up or joining a group of folks that are so far in the corner that they're hiding in their basements or in their bunkers every night waiting for the attack from our government that's coming. They've got that in their heads. I hope that there is absolutely no way what I just said could even be possible. But now you have to understand why those folks think that it is possible. Because what is the purpose of leaving our border wide open when we know people who want to hurt us are on the other side? Given the fact that every one of us who is told the truth about what's going on should come to a similar conclusion, you know what? I'm beginning to think, given where these interruptions happen, maybe it's not the weather that's affecting the broadcast as much as maybe it is the NSA that's trying to keep me from broadcasting right now. Okay, now maybe I needed to go ahead and take my tinfoil hat off. I've had it on a little too long. But there is no reasonable explanation why we have people that, for political reasons alone, would leave our border open.
Well, Tim, you see, we don't want to look like that we're bad people, you see. And only bad people would send poor Mexican families that just want a better life back across the border. You know, that's just bad. We don't want people to think we're bad.
We are supposed to be a nation of laws. I no longer think that the people we have sent to Washington believe that. I no longer think that the people that we have sent to Washington even understand how often they violate the Constitution. I do believe that we have a few good folks that are trying to fight the good fight, and I think that a lot of these people that we have recently sent, primarily via Tea Party support, are doing the best they can. But you know what? There's still not enough of them to get stuff done. So if the political games continue and people get caught up in chasing power and authority and they still don't pay close enough attention to where all the money's coming from. In the meanwhile, why wouldn't ISIS be on our southern border? Can anybody explain that to me? They told us they're coming across our southern border to come get us as soon as they can. They said that. They promised it. It's their words. And like I mentioned earlier, there's no reason for us not to take them at their word. So far, they have done everything in their power to follow through with every promise they've made. They are dangerous and they are ideologically driven. The ideology that drives them is one of an extreme socio-political religious principle that is about conquering other people. They are dangerous. They want to do bad things to us. They want to hurt us. They want to steal our children. They want to rape our women. And they want to slit our men's throats that refuse to convert to Islam and follow their vision of Islam. That's who they are. You must understand your enemy before you have a chance to survive, let alone defeat them. And make no mistake about it. Whether we're at war with them or not, they are at war with us. They are coming. And the people in the White House, and the people in the Pentagon, and the people in the Capitol buildings all know this. It's not a surprise. It's not a shock. And they know that no matter what type of appeasement policies they come with, it's not going to change their directive, their attitude, their mindset. They know what's coming. But instead of having the watchdog the media is supposed to be, keeping an eye on government on the one hand and then their other eye on big business to make sure that the average American has a voice and a protector. They just want to continue to tell the story that America doesn't deserve all the great things that it has, that we're mean to people, and we're racist, and we're sexist, and we're misogynistic, and that there's no reason why America should have everything and all these other countries be so poor. It's America's fault. Everything that's wrong in the world. That's what they believe. That's what they think. That's what they want you to believe. That's what they want you to think. Thank goodness for you. Because I know the people that listen to this show on a regular basis, I know you guys know better. I get that from you in our interactions through social media. I get that in our interactions over in the chat room, which unfortunately I had to close down because of all the technical issues. But I get it. You guys send me emails at ttapintothetruth.com. You guys get on to the website and you send me messages that way. You get over to the Facebook page, and some of you even send me messages via Twitter. You know, we have a presence there, and I know that you guys, the ones that listen the most, the message resonates, and that you guys know better. So it's up to you to help spread the word. It's up to you to make this same case to all your liberal friends, because that's what I try to do every day when I come across a liberal. I ask them point blank, why haven't we closed the border? And before they can even start in with all their humanitarian tree-hugging BS, how it ain't fair, crapola, I tell them stories like this one. I believe Judicial Watch. I do not believe our federal government when they tell us there's no credible threat. I do not believe our federal government when they tell us ISIS isn't on our southern border. I do not believe PolitiFact when they don't even use a single fact in arguing against the article from Judicial Watch. And again, I implore each and every one of you that's listening, if you don't already regularly go over to Judicial Watch, check out www.judicialwatch.org. Go over there, read about them, read their current articles, read their mission statements, read who's on their staff, and if you can spare a dime, send them some so they can keep up their good work, because they are doing good work. I want to shift gears because I've already been had a lot of the time for the show cut into on these technical issues, and I don't know how long it's going to be before we have another. I don't know if it is the NSA or if it is this weather. But regardless of why it is at this point, I don't know how it is. And I definitely want to get a few more topics in today. First of all, let's go ahead and switch gears. And let's talk about Hillary Clinton for just a minute. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit last week about Hillary's jump into the race, because, you know, she's made it official. She's there. God-awful video that, you know, I don't know how anybody listens to that with a straight face. I know a lot of Democrats are still okay with it, but I also know that a lot of Democrats don't feel particularly excited about Hillary Clinton. And the way she's bungled the first week of her official campaign since the beginning, it's understandable. She calls her little van the Scooby van. Well, I guess you could call it the mystery machine, just based on the fact that there's a mystery how this woman thinks she can win an election. The folks on her own side don't support her. There are still some hardcore Hillary fans. In fact, there's a couple folks on my friend list, on my personal friend list, not the show list, but on the personal friend list, that have Hillary pictures now up as their profile pictures in Facebook. Now, this to me, I'm like, okay, you know what? You've got a right to do this. And there was one of them I even wanted to start asking her exactly why it is that she supported Hillary. But she got absolutely hammered by a bunch of other folks that just absolutely attacked her over the fact that she did that, you know, and she wrote this big thing about how she supported Hillary, she voted for her last time, why wouldn't she vote for her again, blah, blah, blah. And again, I wanted to ask at that point, and I probably will end up talking to her at some point in the upcoming week, because it probably would make for a great story. I wanted to ask her why she supported her, why did she vote for her last time? But, you know, I kind of left it alone for now because, like I said, absolutely got hammered. And I know for a fact a lot of the folks that hammered her, they're not on the conservative side of the political spectrum. A lot of them are folks that typically vote Democrat. So this is how I know that there's not a lot of excitement. I mean, you can see it and hear it everywhere. You look at this, people don't just give her the same free pass that they gave Barack Obama. They don't just give her the same pass that they gave Bill. You know, Bill got a lot of leeway from the media. They look the other way on a lot of situations, and they let them get away with a lot of the wag the dog crap, like, you know, bombing in Bosnia, for example. The media doesn't give her the same leeway. But in the past week, she's done everything from getting busted in one of her meeting everyday people, actually only meeting with people that were hand-selected and bussed into the event. She got caught parking the Scooby van in a handicap spot. Got a picture of that, actually, along with a story that goes with it. Link to the Tap Into the Truth Facebook page if you're interested in following that up. I don't want to go much into detail with that. But Hillary is already slicing and dicing herself. It is absolutely humorous to a degree. It's certainly not humorous for her, I'm sure. I mean, how could it be? Why would it be? But in the grand scheme of things, it certainly could be worse. She could have got caught whispering in someone's ear about how she doesn't want to see any regular people. You know, whatever. I don't know how it could be worse. I really don't. It's been bad. It's been real bad. I mean, she doesn't seem to understand that, first of all, she's not as well loved as her husband was amongst their party. She doesn't seem to understand that she's not going to get the same passes that Barack did. One of the most famous pictures that were taken in this first week showed her supposedly sitting down and having a conversation with just everyday people, genuinely listening to randomly met everyday folks. Only some folks took the time to look into it, and the four people sitting at the table with her, one is currently an Obama intern, one is a college Democrat president, yeah, in other words, student body, Young Democrats of America, blah, 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 for that particular college. And the fourth member of the foursome was a Planned Parenthood employee. That doesn't sound like genuinely listening to randomly met folks. That doesn't sound like everyday folks to me. It does sound like the same type of handpicking that you see at Obama events. You know, you see somebody like Ted Cruz when he made his opening announcement that he was officially jumping into the presidential race. He didn't do it in front of handpicked folks. In fact, folks that were around that weren't even necessarily Ted Cruz folks. But he still managed to win over that crowd fairly well. That's the exact opposite of what you're seeing in the early stages of the Hillary campaign. She's going to places where people are being bussed in, people that they know are going to throw her softballs, people that they know are not going to be dangerous to her, not going to challenge her. When I say dangerous, I mean her campaign. They're not going to ask her something tough or challenge her on an issue. They're going to ask a softball question and then agree when she laughs away about how, I don't know, let's say, for example, something like if somebody asked her why she changed her view on same-sex marriage. You're not going to see that happen because these people have been handpicked. What you're going to have these people ask is, gee, Hillary, how do you think that you can help us to improve our lives? And then she gets to go down the socialist rant about how wonderful everything would be if we lived in the socialist utopia that she herself will help to bring forth. That's what you're going to get. You're not going to get, but you will maybe get it from the media, though. Like I said, she doesn't get the same protection from the media that her predecessors have. Right now, I don't know who it'll be, but I still think somebody else is going to emerge in this field, and it's going to be a spark point for a new level of excitement on the Democratic side. And I think Hillary is really nothing more than a way to get the ball rolling for fundraising to begin for the National Party so that they can use it to fund the campaign later on of whoever their eventual nominee becomes. They didn't want to wait any longer to start fundraising, but they haven't decided who it's going to be yet. Now, I don't think Hillary's in on that. Make no mistake. I think Hillary wants to win. I think Hillary wants to be the president. I think she believes she deserves it. I think she's honestly bought into this idea and this mentality that it's her turn. That she did what she had to do to stand by Bill, to help keep him in office, and all this other wonderful stuff. She believes it's her turn. I don't think for a second that she has any doubts about that. I don't doubt that she believes it's her time. But I do also believe that the National Party has other plans. Or, you know, it's not the party itself, the folks that spend billions of dollars a year in donations and contributions that will change the National Party's idea. There's only one thing you can say about Ms. Clinton at this point, and that is that she needs a lot of help if she's going to turn things around, and I don't think she can. I don't think she's going to get the youth vote, and I think you can tell that just by the fact that I came across this while I was doing random research. Number one Google search involving Hillary. How old is Hillary Clinton? That tells you that a lot of folks are feeling disconnected from her and worry if she's still spry enough and young enough to really get them. So I think she's already lost a youth vote. Now, you know, maybe she can turn around, but she's not that great at giving speeches. She's not that great at debates. She's not really, she doesn't really have any accomplishments other than half of the list that I see people when they go down and they start talking about accomplishments that Hillary Clinton has. And I've looked at some of this. The folks on the left that are trying to help her and trying to profit, half of their list really isn't anything more than having been married to Bill. Now, maybe for some people that's enough of an accomplishment to say, hey, you deserve something. I don't know, maybe given the way he likes to spread himself around, so to speak, maybe it was an accomplishment to get him to actually settle down and marry you instead of someone else. But I don't think that's the kind of accomplishment that counts towards whether or not you're qualified to be the president. I think somewhere along the lines, we've kind of lost the idea of what we want or what we expect from a president. We need someone who's a natural leader, someone who can bring both sides of the aisle together enough to get the important stuff done and to know what is important and what isn't. Someone who's going to look at every bill that comes in front of them and decide to sign it or decide to veto it, not based on personal feelings, not based on political platform, but based solely on the constitutionality of it. Because right now, if, let's say, miracle of miracles, Ted Cruz gets elected as our next president, we pick up more Republicans in the Senate, and we essentially have a solid Republican-controlled Congress. Well, let's say that happens, and then let's say that the Republicans, since we know there's just as many progressives in the Republican Party, as there are, well, maybe not just as many, but there are several. There are a lot of progressives in the Republican Party. They're not just in the Democratic Party. So these so-called progressives, they want to push for big business. They want to push for whatever. They want to make sure the government continues to get bigger. And let's say that they put a bill calling it conservative to high heavens, but it's still not something that meshes with the constitutional definition of what our government should be. I want Ted Cruz to veto it, even if they have a veto-proof majority. Even if they're going to turn around and try and push it back through later, I want somebody, whether it's Ted Cruz or whether it's Rand Paul, not Ron, I'm sorry, Ron's not running this time, but whether it's Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or even, heaven forbid, somehow or another, something I really don't think is going to happen, but whatever, Hillary Clinton, no matter who they are, I want them to stand in that office, and every time they look at a piece of legislation that has been passed and comes to their desk, I want them to decide whether or not they're going to sign it or veto it based on whether or not it's constitutional. Based on whether or not the plain, simple language of the Constitution says this is something the federal government can, should, and would do. That's what I want the basis to be. That's what I want in a candidate. I think we have that in Ted Cruz. I feel like that's probably the case with Rand Paul. And I don't know, unless it has something to do with immigration, I don't know if we can count on Marco Rubio as much with that. But on most other items and issues, I think maybe Marco Rubio is just as good. My concern is, and we've seen this a lot, that sometimes folks get into office and they are not who they claim to be. I think in lots of cases we need to look at the fact that voting record is an issue. I think we need to have a balance between somebody who's been in office long enough in various offices that we can look at their voting record, but still hasn't been in D.C. long enough to be corrupted by the cesspool. I would still prefer a return to the majority of the people that hold the office of president to have executive experience. And that doesn't necessarily mean they have to be a governor of a state, although that doesn't hurt, but it does mean that they probably should have military experience and should have been at an officer level at some point. Those things I would love to see. I think the American people should return to that type of basis. But this first week on the campaign trail for Hillary has not been a great one. It's one I'm sure she'd love to get over. She's still painting it a certain way. She's trying to make it spin. It's been great. It's been wonderful. But in truth, people have been paying attention to little things. The parking, the Scooby bus, as she's calling it, you know, handicapped parking space. If that doesn't say a feeling of privilege, I don't know what else does. The fact that she's bussed in people to the majority of these events, that there has been no random meeting with just regular, everyday folks, it hasn't happened. She can't afford it. She's not prepared to talk. All right, again, sorry about the disconnect, but anyway, not real sure where was that with that one, kind of lost train of thought. But here's what we're going to do, folks. We're going to go ahead and take a short break, and then when we come back from the break, we're going to touch on some different subjects that I definitely wanted to get into. And in the meanwhile, I appreciate you staying with us today. It's been kind of a rough day technologically wise. Again, this weather is an issue and we're looking to try and fight through it. So thanks for listening and we'll be right back. Looking over me. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for staying with us. With you as always, this is still your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp. We are coming to you live from Roane County, Tennessee, fighting some weather issues that are causing technical issues as far as our connection to the studio. So appreciate you guys staying with us and fighting through it. We've had similar issues in the past. Ordinarily, that hasn't been quite this bad. But today's topics are way too important. You know, the whole ISIS just across our border was important. Here's another important story. I'm sure a lot of you guys have probably heard about this by now, but I could not let this go by without discussing it. The story broke back on the 13th of this week. Evidently, a black judge in Kentucky gave two home invaders and armed robbers a very light sentence because he feels that their 3-year-old white victim was a racist. And he felt that way because in her victim statement, the little girl said that she was now afraid of black people after they broke into her home and threatened her with guns. Yeah, kind of silly, isn't it? Basically, in an extremely outrageous statement from the bench, Louisville Judge Olu Stevens attacked the tiny white toddler and her parents for their racism, calling the little girl's statement disturbing, while at the same time excusing the actions of the criminals who traumatized the girl. The judge was more upset at the little girl for being scared by the big, mean, bad armed robbers than he was at the armed robbers themselves. At the sentencing trial of one of the two robbers, the victim's impact statement written by the little girl's mother was entered into evidence. The statement read, in part, quote, "Whenever we are running errands, if we come across a black male, she holds me tight and begs me to leave. It has affected her friendships at school and our relationship with African American friends." Then the judge, in an action that is completely insane, attacked the little girl, saying that her statement disgusted him. But when Wallace was brought up for the sentencing February 4th in Jefferson Circuit Court, it was the parents, not Wallace, who suffered the judge's wrath. Quote, "I'm offended. I'm deeply offended that they would be victimized by an individual and express some kind of fear of all black men." This little girl certainly has been victimized, and she can't help the way she feels. My exception is more with her parents, and they're accepting that kind of mentality and fostering those types of stereotypes. Okay. So the armed robbers who traumatized the little girl gets probation because this judge claims that the little girl was a racist. And he assumes that the little girl deserved to be robbed at gunpoint because she's white. How does this happen from the bench? I mean, that's what I want to know. How does this happen from the bench? This guy's a judge. He obviously worked hard. He got through college, got through law school, did a stint doing whatever he did before he became a judge. There's no question he has earned that position. You don't get there without putting in the effort. But we're talking about a little girl, a toddler. She's old enough to know what these guns represent. She's old enough to understand that she and her family were victims of an armed robbery. This has a way of crushing the feelings of safety that even adults have. I don't think it's so far-fetched to have a reaction where immediately, while she's still this young, that it's going to scare her when she sees anybody that reminds her or sees or hears anything that reminds her of the fear that she experienced when she faced these armed robbers at gunpoint. Pretty scary stuff. There's nothing racist about suddenly being scared every time you see a black person when you're this young and you're the victim of a violent crime. Where's the outrage the judge should have had towards these two criminals? The fact that they're the reason why so many white people get a little scared when they see black people. That's a blanket statement. And that certainly can be twisted, but I'm willing to risk it. Where's the outrage that this judge should have had towards these two criminals for scaring this young girl to the point that it has now affected friendships that she herself had? You read it in the victim impact statement. It's affected friendships at school. This little girl means that she had friends at school that were a different color. That, to me, indicates she's not racist. But even at that age, it's... All right, I'm back, and I apologize again. These technical glitches, this weather is really affecting our connections, and I don't know... what else to do, because it's stuff outside of the studio. I can't really, there's nothing here on this end. I've had some glitches in the past that have been on my end of the equipment. This is outside of my control. Again, I thank you guys for staying with me and listening to this point. I appreciate your patience. I appreciate you guys, period. I really do. I mentioned it last week that our weekly plays have started breaking 41,000 across all the ways that you can find the show. Last week, we ended up with last week's broadcast breaking 60,000 plays. So the numbers continue to grow, which means you guys are sharing the show and that we're making improvements. And when I give you those numbers, that's just the numbers of the most recent broadcast, the broadcast that happened that week. And, you know, previous shows are still getting played as well. You know, you folks are finding this in the archives, whether it's right here at BTR or whether you're finding us at Stitcher.com or at TunedIn.com or over at iTunes or over at Podcast.com. Wherever you're finding the show, you guys are, and a lot of it has been at Stitcher.com and at iTunes. So, I mean, I've thanked you guys more than I can. But it means a great deal to me. And I just wanted to say that before the next technical thing comes along, because I'm starting to get frustrated to the point where I don't know if we're going to be able to continue much longer. But I definitely want to get back and make some quick points about this judge, because it's absolutely asinine to give the criminals a break because a toddler was frightened being held up at gunpoint. Home invasion, armed robbery. They're attacked by people with weapons. And because it's left a lasting impression on this child that, yes, it's misplaced. But that misplacement is because when she sees a black person, it reminds her of the black people that came and scared her so badly. It's not because she didn't like black people before. It's because she's very scared right now, and it's going to take a long time for her to move past that. But she certainly can, and she certainly will at some point, I hope. I mean, I can't speak to where her mental state is on a clinical level, but I think it's completely understandable that a person would experience that level of fear. But this man is supposed to be a judge. He earned that position. He did what he had to do to get there. You know, I already mentioned the education and the hard work, and you don't just become a judge by saying, hey, you know what, today I think I'm going to go be a judge. Doesn't happen. That might happen in fast food. You know what? Today, I think I'm just going to go be a line cook. And you should pay me $15 an hour, which is something else I'd hope to get to today. I don't know if we're going to be able to. But this judge, he gave the criminals a break. And he used the statement of the toddler as an excuse to give them that break. Like somehow the fact that, oh, you're a black criminal and these were white victims, so, you know, it's okay. They were probably racist. Racists deserve what they get, right? I don't know what was in this judge's head, but that's certainly the way that comes across. It's a dangerous precedent to set, and I certainly don't think that he would have given them the same break if these people had broke into his house. I don't know if this judge has a family or not, but if he had a little girl and his little girl had the same reaction and suddenly every time she saw another black person other than mommy and daddy, it scared her, I don't think he would automatically assume racism. I'm pretty sure he would just assume he's got a scared little girl. When you are involved with a violent crime, you deserve punishment. And if that crime never elevates to the point that somebody gets hurt, great. There should be a different level of punishment than if it did elevate to someone getting hurt. But you are still a criminal, and you still deserve to be punished, period. There is no reasonable excuse for going easy on these guys just because you scared a small child into thinking that there is reasons to be scared of everyone of the same color. If this little girl is anything like most little girls, she will move past it and she will be fine. But you, Your Honor, you crossed the line. You failed to do your job. Because your job is to protect that little girl and her family and whoever the next person down the list would be as far as the next victim. If they're willing to take guns into a situation like this, even if they never intend on using them, there's always the possibility that something goes wrong and somebody gets hurt. By making it easier for them to get back onto the streets, you have made it easier for that to happen, for some innocent to possibly be killed. And you did it because you thought that the little girl was racist. Now, I'm sorry, but it seems to me, unquestionably, undeniably, that it's you that's failed here. And it seems unquestionably, nearly undeniably, that you, in fact, are the racist, Your Honor. Because if you put yourself in the shoes of the victims, I don't think you come away feeling like racism's at play. I think you come across thinking, that little girl should have never been so terrified. That little girl has a right to feel safe in her home. That little girl has a right to feel safe when she is with her parents when they're out. She doesn't feel that anymore. And it's not because she has a dislike or a distaste for a different color person. It's because she was the victim of a crime. And you, Your Honor, you're supposed to equally apply justice for both parties. What is a fair and reasonable punishment for the criminal, and what is fair and reasonable restitution for the victim? This little girl didn't go out looking to pick a fight with somebody. This little girl wasn't attending KKK meetings. This little girl was in her home with her parents when they had their house broken into by armed bandits. That's not racism, Your Honor. This judge, he dropped the ball. And really, that's just insane. All right, going to take another quick break, and when I get back from this break, we're going to talk about the $15 an hour bit, because yeah, they had all kinds of stuff going on April 15th, and it was tax day, and we'll work on wrapping up the show at that point. In the meanwhile, stay with me, and we'll be right back. We are back. Thanks for staying with us. And, you know, let's get into this another wonderful story from the past week. Of course, everybody knows this past week was tax day. You know, that day that we all feel so wonderfully charitable and end up having to make sure that good old Uncle Sam gets his fair share. I really don't think that Uncle Sam, or at least the folks that work for Uncle Sam, have any idea what fair actually means. But that's another story. The big thing that went on, however, this year that coincided with April 15th being tax day is, well, fast food folks are really, really being whipped up. And this has been going on for about 3 years now. And we talked about this last year quite a bit with the push for $15 an hour. So this year it was 15 on the 15th, where once again a lot of these folks took to the street and were protesting. They honestly believe that somehow working in the quick service restaurant, if they're just an average cashier or just a regular line cook, you know, flipping a burger, dropping some fries in a basket, somehow that should be worth $15 an hour. Now, we've talked about this before, when they had this conversation. But yeah, since they're doing it again, we need to talk about it again. And it still comes down to this very simple thing. That job is not worth $15 an hour. And if you're not happy with what you're making, then you have options. First and foremost, it is considered a entry-level position. Entry-level positions are never supposed to be careers. If your ambition for your entirety of your career is to ask somebody if they want fries with that, then you shouldn't expect that you're ever really going to have very much. If you actually want to make a living, earn enough money, then that means you've got to take one of three paths. Path number one, the easiest path, improve your education, go get a better job. Now, I emphasize the word easier path. I say that because it's not easy. It's just easier than the other two paths. None of these paths are easy. It's not supposed to be easy. There's a reason why it's called earning a living, because you have to go out and earn it. We've got helicopter parents that have convinced their kids that they deserve ribbons for participation, for just showing up. I was coaching youth basketball this past season, mentioned it on the show before, and I got to tell you, I had a couple of girls. I loved it. I loved all the girls that were there, but I had a couple of girls that, you know, most of the season weren't around, but they were there for the last game because they thought they were going to get a trophy. Didn't show up for practices. Between the two of them, didn't show up for half of the season, but they showed up thinking that they should get their trophy. they got some free pizza that we provided for the team for their pizza party, because they were part of the team, at least for part of the season. But the point is that when you start teaching these kids that you get ribbons for participating and you get trophies for participating, then suddenly you lose the idea that awards are actually meant to reward excellence, that there is effort involved, that you have to earn them. And when you lose sight of that, when you stop teaching your kids these things, they grow up not even understanding the concepts. That's how you end up with people thinking, yeah, okay, I don't want to go through the work of going to college. Oh, my gosh, it means I've got to, like, show up and stuff, and I've got to pass tests. Oh, my goodness, it's not all partying. So they don't want to do that. Well, you know, it would be absolutely awesome if you could get a job as a frontline cashier or in the back just flipping burgers and get paid $15 an hour, because guess what? If you actually could work full-time hours, my goodness, that's close to $30,000. In most parts of the country, you could live reasonably well with that. I mean, there's still some places like California and New York where that's maybe about a third of what you need. But in most of the country, $30,000 is not like you're going to be driving a Maserati and living in a McMansion, but you're going to have a decent enough house if you manage your money well. You have a decent enough house, you're going to have a vehicle, and you're going to be able to participate in extracurricular activities like vacations. It'd be awesome. And it would be wonderful if you had a fast food restaurant that could afford to pay that. Let's say McDonald's, for example, though, did that. I keep hearing all these fake, made-up BS numbers. Here's the only number you need to understand. McDonald's, not a lot of corporate stores. Most McDonald's restaurants are franchised. In fact, most restaurants, quick service across the country, no matter what the brand, most of them are franchise. Overwhelming majority. You got a few companies like Crystal, for example. Now, they're mostly a corporate store. That's the exception and certainly not the rule. Most across-the-board fast foods, even sit-down, casual restaurants, a lot of them, if they've got a brand like, let's call them Red Lobster, for example, a lot of them franchises. That means they don't have all those big corporate dollars behind them, so they would have to raise prices in order to meet those payments. And then they're forced with decisions. Okay, how much can we raise the price on a Big Mac? And you're still going to come show up and buy it. Going to go buy a $4 Big Mac? I think a lot of people actually still would. Okay, what about an $8 Big Mac? Ooh, now suddenly I don't think anybody's coming in the door. Is an $8 Big Mac reasonable? No. Is an $8 Big Mac what you might need in order to pay everybody working in your restaurant $15 an hour? I think we're getting in that range. And again, I know you've probably heard numbers that say otherwise. Oh, you'd only have to raise prices 20% across the board or 15%. I've even heard numbers as low as 6%. Raise all the prices 6% and that would pay for it. Those numbers are bogus and BS. They just are. Sit down and do the math yourself. Here's where people get crazy. What, Tim? You want me to do the math? Yeah, do the math. First of all, I think you'll find out real quick why you may not be running a business. Now, for those of you that listen to the show that do run businesses, I think right now you're probably standing up and applauding me. Yes, Tim, tell them, tell the truth. And restaurants are one of the worst as far as profitability, because there's so much you lose in margins, because if you're doing it right, then produce, for example, you probably throw away close to as much as you sell, because you want to make sure you're providing fresh product to your customer. You want to make sure that you're handling your food safely. And again, if you're doing things properly in your store and you're rotating, things like tomatoes and lettuce, those things, they don't last a real long time. Even the folks that don't run a restaurant, if you buy your groceries and you're bringing it in and you buy fresh vegetables, you know you've only got a few days to use that. And you're holding it in a fashion that the restaurants don't get to. Restaurants are under a different set of rules. So the margins are terrible. And let's not forget the fact that, you know what? They've got to pay for electricity. They've got to pay for water. And they're paying for a lot of water. A lot of water. And then they have to pay what they're paying to all their employees. You know, here's the ultimate issue and the argument that everybody keeps missing is the fact that you're facing this and you're thinking about how nice it would be if I got paid this amount. And it would be great. And a restaurant might be able to afford to pay an individual that. But if you start paying everybody across the board, it becomes very, very expensive. All right, things seem to be smoothing out real quick. I'm going to take a super quick break, and then at the end of the break, we'll be right back. Hang with me. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm back. Sorry about that, but I had an important call that I needed to take, and I'm glad I did. Essentially, it's a tip for an upcoming broadcast that I'll be looking into. I think a lot of folks will find that interesting. In the meanwhile, just to finish up this whole idea about getting paid $15 an hour to work in fast food, you know, we went over the first pass in order to change your fortunes. The easiest route to take is, of course, education. You improve your educational status, you can improve the job that you get. The second easiest route, and one that a lot of people don't want to take, is get a second or even a third job. A lot of folks don't want to go that route because you will be tired. But it also means that you're going to be working a lot. A lot of folks, unfortunately, have been pushed into having to do that anyway because they were working full-time before. And then because of trying to avoid parts of the stipulations of Obamacare as far as employer-mandated stuff, a lot of folks turned around and said, you know what, we're going to reduce a lot of people to part-time. So a lot of folks, you're in a bad situation, and they had to find other work to supplement what they were getting. If you're fortunate enough to be working full-time and you can find another part-time job, that's another way to make more money. You can't expect people to pay you more than a job is worth, whether you like it or not. You as an individual, you may be worth $1 million, but it's still up to you to go prove that. Now, the other third and probably the least popular and probably even the hardest route to go is work your way up. If you work for McDonald's and you want to become a manager or even a store owner, well, McDonald's has a pass and a plan for folks to do that. But you don't just say, hey, that's what I want to do. To get in, and you have to demonstrate to them that you're capable of doing the things that need to be done. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of extra hours, and it's a lot of extra time. But as you do that, you make more money every step of the way that you go up. But at the end of the day, you're never going to make $70,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year working what everyone considers to be an entry-level position. It's unreasonable for you to expect that. And I don't say that because I don't believe that you should get that kind of money. I say it because you have to have reasonable expectations. I'm not working at the first job I had. I think most of you out there, if you're lucky enough to have a job in the economy the way it is, and it is slowly improving, at least to some degree, then I think that you're going to have opportunities for advancement. But every time you do that, it means you have to be looking for a better opportunity. It's a lot easier to find another job while you're working, too. And it sounds crazy. Okay, I've got a job. Why do I want to look for another one? It's easier to find that better opportunity because especially when the economy goes south, employers look around and they know a lot of the folks that lose their jobs do so because their previous employer decided of the people they had to keep, those people aren't among them. They know that they had to make hard choices. Who am I going to keep? Who is going to stay? Who's going to stay on my payroll? And when they know that they've got to make those choices, they keep the folks that they feel like do the best job for them. So when another employer is looking at a potential hire, they're looking at these people and they're saying to themselves, hey, you know what? That guy thought these people were good enough. That means they're probably good enough for us to take a look at. So you have to look for your opportunities. If you're not happy where you're at, then it's up to you to change your position. Please, please do not ask for our federal government to intervene. Please don't ask for our federal government to step up and say, hey, you know what? We've got to make this change. It's not fair. Because again, like I said earlier, I don't think the folks in D.C. understand what the word fair means anymore, if very many of them ever understood what fair means. Remember, a lot of these folks born off a lot better off than any of us and haven't faced anything even remotely similar to hard times. We've got to take our own actions and take responsibility for ourselves. Please stop asking the government to do this for you. We can't trust them to do a good job even if they wanted to. Even in the early days of social programs when they genuinely were trying to be helpful and create that safety net, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to help you because they don't understand the problem. And you can look at this in any myriad of issues today. The people that want to push gun controls and make new gun laws, they don't know anything about guns, so they don't know what does and doesn't make a gun safer. They don't understand what does or doesn't make people safer when they're around guns. They don't know. They don't understand. And while you can't expect an elected official to know everything about everything, you sure as heck can expect them to know something about projects they decide to take on. They should have to do research beforehand. Hello, do your homework. If you don't know about guns, don't go crusading against guns. If you're Tim McGraw, don't be surprised when country fans get upset at you that you're doing a concert to raise money for the gun-grabbing idiots. He's facing a lot of flack over that this week. Have you guys heard about that? I mean, Tim McGraw's doing this concert. He got involved. Now, in his mind, he's trying to raise money for the Sandy Hook folks. You know, he doesn't understand that that's not really what this money's going to be used with. That's not where the money's going. You've got, now I can't even think of his name. Former mayor of New York City. Bloomberg, yeah. How did I miss Bloomberg? Come on. So, yeah, Michael Bloomberg that puts together this thing supposedly to help the Sandy Hook community, when really this is about funneling funds into his little organization that's going around and trying to take firearms away from Americans. Ridiculous. But guess what? He had his little friend that was going to headline with him. He dropped out because he had gun rights activist groups hounding him left and right. Now, Tim McGraw is not backing down, or at least not yet. He's standing firm because, again, in his mind, and I will give him credit, I honestly believe that he believes it, he thinks he's just raising money for that community. I think that's what he believes. I don't have any reason to doubt it. I wish he would have done a little more research on who he decided to get in bed with on this little activity. But he's facing a lot of flack, and I don't think he understands why. Why are all these people suddenly mad at me? First of all, just like with the Dixie Chicks, you're in country music, dude. Seriously. And country music fans typically are the ones that associate with government best get up out of my business when it comes to my property and my guns. And while every argument you can make that seems reasonable to you about how we need to protect our children, I'm pretty sure if we take a look at your Facebook page, or more importantly, your daughter's Facebook page, haven't you spent a lot of time, Tim, in teaching her responsible gun use? You know, when I first heard about this story, you know, people started attacking you right off the bat, and they pointed out real quick the connections to the Facebook page. So, you know, doing my due diligence for show prep, I went and looked at those pages too. Your daughter, she seems pretty handy with a rifle. So I know you understand that real gun safety comes from teaching our kids how to safely handle and use a firearm, not from trying to hide them away in gun-free zones. That's what we get from our government friends, though. Ignoring our Constitution, taking our rights away, forgetting about personal liberty, and the ultimate question that comes back to the $15 an hour minimum wage crapola for fast food workers still comes back to this. It ain't about what the government should be telling restaurants they should pay you. It's about you taking personal responsibility for improving your own situation. That's where you're at. That's the reality. It may sound harsh, and I'm sorry if it does, but it's a harsh reality that you need to hear if you honestly believe you deserve $15 an hour for flipping a Crystal Burger or building the El Diablo burger at Hardee's or wherever you happen to be working at. Because seriously, where do you get this idea? Where do you get this idea that that's worth $15 an hour? I'm scared to death of the day that you can get $15 an hour for it, because that means the dollar has become so valueless that it doesn't mean anything. But that's the end of that. I don't really have an outrage of the week this week, but I do have a joke of the week. Don't normally have one of those. Wanted to hit that real quick. If you listened in to Wednesday's broadcast, you heard me mention this already, but it's too good not to share it here as well. The Reverend Al Sharpton. He has made the determination that him and his little group, they were upset about trying to get Obama's nominee for Attorney General through the process of being confirmed. So his little group decided that they were going to go on a hunger strike. Now, I'm thinking, if you remember the old Al Sharpton before he got the show on MSNBC, then you're probably thinking that hunger strike for a few weeks probably wouldn't be so bad for him. But the new Al, you know, got slim and trim for the show. He's to the point where he almost looks sickly. He's so thin. I mean, I really don't think he's too healthy. Needs to eat a cheeseburger or something. I don't know. But this whole idea of a hunger strike, I heard that, and I'm like, what? Seriously? Then I looked into it. And as it turns out, the tremendous threat that this was, ooh, they're going to starve to death. No, ain't nothing to worry about. Nobody's going to hungry that long. They decided they were going to take groups of volunteers. These volunteers were going to break up into groups, and they were going to alternate. Okay, you've got this day, you've got this day, you've got this day. And they were going to fast for a single day. Al, that's not a hunger strike. That's not how hunger strikes work. Thanks for playing. We have some lovely parting gifts. That's going to have to be it for this week. Again, I apologize over the technical issues early. I'm glad they kind of straightened out. The weather has cleared a bit here, but it's still not great. Remember, thoughts and prayers to the folks south of here from what I've been hearing. Not just severe thunderstorms, but tornado warnings, tornado watches. This just, again, when the weather gets crazy around the country, nobody's better about responding than Americans trying to help their neighbors out. It's one of the things that makes us great. It's not our government. It's not our founding documents, although those go a long way towards making this a great nation. But what really makes this a great nation is the people. We stand together when we need to. And we've got to start standing together a little bit more. So, again, thoughts and prayers to those folks. And when the weather gets nuts, I know we can count on you guys to help out. So let's keep our thoughts and prayers there. And again, I'm going to remind you, if you're going to reach out to your liberal friends and try to make a point, then you've got to be making sense. Because if you're not making sense, you're just making noise. It's time we stopped making noise and started making a difference. Ladies and gentlemen, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. You've got to be prepared to put in a little bit of effort, a little bit of time to do your own research. Use your brain and always be prepared to dig below the surface if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Please join us again later. Got some exciting announcements and some exciting possible guests upcoming. In the meanwhile, have a great week, and we'll be back. See you next Sunday. I promise you that I will always
can say.